Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Your Intention Matters, the podcast. Thank you very much for joining us on this one again. My name, of course, is still Paul Madat. Today, I have Jay Light. He is SVP of Sales at Ascentium, coming to us from Round Rock, just outside of Austin. Do I have that right, Jay?
You do. Good day.
Good man. How are you?
Wonderful. Good to be here.
Yeah, good to be here as well. Thanks for joining us. Do me a favor, say hi to everybody, provide a quick intro. And then let's jump into it.
Sure. So Jay Light, been a sales leader for many years through several different companies, but I grew up in Texas most of my time. Family from the Midwest, so you won't pick up the true Texan accent there unless I get really tired. Two daughters, one's in university already, the other one's about to be there. And I'm married for 3 years now. And my first wife passed away in 2014. So if you hear me interchange names there, it's not that I'm getting in trouble for anything. That's just a part of our family discussion. So, but I got remarried in 2019, and my wife is a radio host here in Austin. So,
I'm sorry for your loss. You know,
thanks.
Less than a decade ago, and
she was my first wife was a sales trainer. So you would have appreciated her background in that area.
Much
so,
respect. Yes. Much yes. respect for her.
Lots of experience with that. And so I thought you and my brother-in-law does similar things too. So much love for the sales training environment.
I love it. I knew there was a reason why I invited you on here. So Jay, listen, I appreciate you being here. I know you're stretched pretty thin with what you're doing in your career. And so I appreciate that. And we were talking before I hit record. And as you know, the title of the podcast is called Your Intention Matters. And that's really, it's really quite frankly, just built off of my premise that nothing's really given to any of us. And it all starts with mindset and intention. And without it, the status quo doesn't really change. And of course, most of us in the world of selling and sales never thought we'd even get into this state. And yet here we are, you know, millions of people carrying a bag and trying to figure it out. And with that said, let's get into your story. Ready to go?
Sure.
All right, here we go. We go back in time with this podcast, Jay. Let's go back circa mid-90s, early 90s, Hammer Time, Beverly Hills 90210, right? What else was there? Will Smith, Fresh Prince, Texas Tech. I was going to say Aggies, but that's the Red Raiders, right? I wouldn't want to...
Yeah, we're the Red Raiders. Although, you know, I did meet my first wife on a bus trip to go see a Texas A&M football game. And as a side story for any of you, your listeners that are Texas Tech fans, in 92, I actually helped start the big tortilla tradition we have. I didn't start it, but I recruited a sponsor there locally, and I took 2,000 tortillas on a road trip in a duffel bag into the Texas A&M field, which now would get me arrested, but took those in at a kickoff. We threw them all up in the air, which unbeknownst to me, the ABC camera was right behind us. And got a whole thing on national television. And that's what spurred, you know, kind of the craziness of Texas Tech tortilla throwing up at the kickoffs. So it had been abound for a year or two before that. But so anyway, side story for A&M.
Well, this Canadian guy has no idea what that is. So I'll have to maybe Google it and see see what's there. From 25
years ago. In this part of the
ago.
Country, it's, you know, right there. Well, I won't say clubbing seals, but I guess I just did. But it's a thing at kickoff where all the tortillas go up and it irritates all the fan base for the other teams. So it's
gotcha.
Just a fun thing we do during American football games. But so, yeah, so I went to school up there. It was on a scholarship. I was supposed to go to the Air Force Academy originally and a few others. And then a week before my both football thing there went south and then they didn't let me in as a pilot because of my vision. I decided to pursue other things and, out of the goodness, kind of to your point of intentionality, I had no idea what I wanted to do, but I was going to go be an engineer originally. And I got a private scholarship that required no strings attached. So I took that to a public university in Texas, which was what that required at the time for academics. And I started as a computer science major, very quickly switched to engineering, and I did that for 2 years. And thought that's what I wanted to do. And my dad was a contractor. And so I'd worked with him at times and then realized that nobody in those fields really spoke very much. There wasn't a lot of collaboration, and I realized quickly my skill sets lied in helping to get people on the same page and or getting things done through communication way more than it did through the pen and paper or the engineering type side. So while I understood it, my grades were A's and B's and everything non-major, and they were C's and D's in my major. So I then proceeded to look around. I was going to go into advertising or marketing business, and they wouldn't take my hours. And so I didn't want to repeat a year and a half of university at that point. So I found another major. It's kind of a running joke in my Dell years when I was there that I had a director, a VP that used to change my degree constantly because he didn't like that my degree is actually RLS, which is Recreation and Leisure Services. So in plain simple math or English, that's Outdoor Parks and Rec. I'm not even sure it exists anymore.
Okay.
And I have more hours in my minor, which is communication studies, which is more like organizational psychology, which I loved that field. But I had to get out. I didn't want to pay for the extra 3 years on my own to go redo what they had wanted me to do. So that was where I ended up. And then I started working multiple jobs, working in a bike shop, selling things because I was a cyclist on the team there. Mm-hmm. And the whole time I was planning to go into construction with my dad. And then I guess one last summer I was there, my dad passed away and we'd already decided not to do that. And so at that point I stuck around in Lubbock and ended up getting into, of all things, I left the bicycle shop because I wasn't making enough money after I got married. And someone offered me a job in outside sales and straight commission, selling alarm systems, which I found out later was door to door. And I didn't know any better because I was young and stupid at the time. And so I took the job. And I did have a mentor that I'd asked about it. And he said, well, it's probably not going to work out for you, but I think it'd be a good learning experience if you're willing to stick through it to learn a little bit about yourself. And that was probably my first foray into real sales training because he's retired now, but this gentleman was in sales for years at Texas Instruments and very, very skilled. And that proved to be very prescient advice because I stayed there for a year. They went through 80 salespeople in the year I was there. And I had more sales than anybody, than all of them combined. And I still couldn't make any money. And they, you know, get off the sidetracks of the side stories. I ultimately had to sue them and get my last paycheck 2 years after I left because they wouldn't pay me. After I made the largest sale in the company's history, they wouldn't pay me for it. So, you know, fun things. And then I worked for a temp agency up there where I was helping to get, I was supposed to come in and do sales for them. And the two people that ran the company quit the day I started. So I very quickly had to adapt and become the person that was checking everybody in, running their system. And I had no idea how their system worked. And I still was able to turn his business, you know, 100% growth in a short period of time, only to have that guy walk in one day and say, yeah, you're a burden on my payroll. And I'm like, I'm the only person on your payroll. So, you know, how does this really work?
Yeah.
I'm not sure what more I could do here. So I was dead set on, I'm never going into sales again. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. Such a bad experience. And then I had a small office supply company in West Texas that I knew a gentleman there. And because of all funny things, some people might even know this is anymore, but a college friend had gotten me into Amway business for a couple of years. And while I never did anything with it that you would consider impressive or substantive, I spent a lot of time around a lot of people. And I met this one gentleman. So he said, hey, I work for this office supply company. I think you'd be great to help us with sales, to help, you know, with the new program we're doing. Can you please come over? I'm not getting back into sales.
Right.
That's the worst industry ever. I hate it. Just come by, come on. And so I went by and they explained what they wanted me to do, which was essentially start up a new line for them of selling office supplies in a market that was heavily Office Depot, Office Max at the time. And I took the job and they were some of the nicest people and just could not have had a better experience with just real solid leadership, good people, good, genuine human beings. And so that I realized my disdain for sales was not sales. It was the people I'd worked for. And they had, you know, I was so young, I didn't understand the difference yet of what I maybe know now in that regard. So that reinforced a lot. And then my wife graduated and she got a job in Austin. We were trying to move down to Austin. And, you know, I eventually got a job with Dell after she'd already come down here. And to those people's credit, I had to come to them on a Friday and say, look, you knew I wanted to go to Austin. They offered me a job, but the catch is I have to be there Monday. So I can't give you any notice. And not only did they not complain about it, they said, please do it. We support you. We know you wanted to go to Austin. You've done a great job for us. We know this market wasn't going to be big enough for you, so we're excited for you. And he didn't know at the time. I had no money in the bank account because, you know, I was young, married, and all that stuff. And they actually gave me another 2 weeks of severance plus my 2 weeks that I already had, which paid for my trip down to U-Haul everything down to Austin that I had no way to pay if they hadn't done it. So just really reinforce what good people. And I say all that as a grounding rod, because when I got to Dell, it was the easiest job it had to date. And it probably was the easiest job for the longest time, because I'd had so many kind of quote bad jobs that I'd overcome that I had a grounding rod that helped keep me sane on, look, this is not comfortable, this whatever situation is, but it's nowhere near as bad as what I dealt with before, you know? So you were going to say something in there.
No, I was going to ask you, you know, your introduction to professional selling was hardly amazing. It didn't sound like you were in the right environments. And
no, and
to your point, it's not, wasn't really the profession of selling, but you were just either with the wrong people or the wrong environments. But that can have a massive impact, because if that's all you know, then that's what you think, that's the reality of the scenario. And yet here you are, you know, 25 years later, and you're still a sales professional. And so the decision to move to Dell, number one, was that yours? Did they find you, or did you find them?
That was me looking for, we knew we wanted to come to Central Texas. My wife was from Dallas, didn't want to move back there. I was from San Antonio, didn't want to move back there. So we decided, hey, that's, you know, that's halfway in between. Let's go there. And she got a job with, what's the name of the company now? They're a sales training company that does Microsoft training and all that kind of thing. And I hadn't found anything yet. And so I ran into a couple of people. I was just networking, and I'd applied to Dell multiple times. I'd applied to a couple of different places. And I finally just drove down here, made a trip to Austin to go push my agenda, you know, work my way into whatever I could, take control of my own actions. And I had a couple of interviews lined up. And I had a friend who had run into a Dell guy on a treadmill at the gym and said, hey, will you talk to my friend? And I talked to this guy on the phone a couple of times, never met him. And he said, yeah, sure, come on by. I sit in this building. So that day I decided just to pop in, and I couldn't get an interview audience at all with their HR department.
Yeah.
And I walked up the building that day, and it's pouring rain, just cats and dogs pouring rain. And I happened to have a giant golf umbrella that could fit like four people under it. And so sure enough, what happens, all these people are coming in from lunch. They scramble under my umbrella, and I walk them in the door. And these guys were very appreciative of that. Said, what are you here for? You're in a suit. You obviously don't work here. Nobody works here unless you're in an interviewing that day. You don't wear a suit. So what are you here for? I said, well, I actually came by to meet with HR and you know, looking for a job. And I, you know, talked to this guy, and they're like, oh yeah, they're not going to like that very much. But tell you what, you let me in with the umbrella, I'm going to walk you up there, and I'm going to walk you in the general area. Then I'm going to leave, because they'll get very mad if I do it. But I'm like, sure, let's do it. So I get up there, and they walk me past the HR person, and I'm thinking it's a big formal area. No, it's a cube. Right. It's literally someone's cube, which I learned later, that's just the Dell culture. So I walk in, and she hears me out and says, well, you're not supposed to be here. You could be arrested for this. As a matter of fact, I'm kicking you out of the building. I'm like, understood, you know? And so on her way out, she asked how it got there. And, you know, of course I started to look for relatable points where I could bring her into the conversation and ask about her and how long she'd been there. And, you know, going through my qualifications list or checklist for her, I mean, to get her talking. And so she says, well, I'm going to take you by your friend. Let's go say hi to him. He works right over here. And keep in mind, I've never met him. I have no idea what he looks like. Ah. Like nothing at all. What Deepak looked like, you know? And so I come up there, and sure enough, and he plays it off great. He's like, Jay, so good to see you. How are you, buddy?
Yeah.
He's never met me either. And so after that, she warmed up and she escorts me to the door, and she says, well, you know, maybe we could get you in a few weeks. I'm like, yeah, I've got two other interviews here in town. I'm looking to do something. So, you know, I could come back tomorrow for an interview.
Yeah.
And just, okay, I'll make it happen. And, you know, and then the other rest kind of worked out from there, but it was the umbrella and the willingness to stick my nose in a place where nobody else would and be willing to get thrown out, where I think a lot of people have been uncomfortable. And I was uncomfortable too, to be clear. It was not that I was willing to do it, you know, without recourse, but I didn't feel like I had many other options if I wanted to pursue Dell. And the irony of it is, Paul, is the, when I got the job offer in the mail and I got the packet and everything overnighted to take my role there, the same day I got two postcards of declining me from the offer, the applications I had put in online.
From Dell.
Yeah, from Dell. Interesting. Because there were two different roles. And so I got the, now it's an email, of course, but then it was a postcard. We really appreciate you applying and thank you for, we're going to consider you for other roles in the future. And it's obviously just a boilerplate document they sent out. So
Jay, how do you, okay. So your entry into Dell, again, is anything but cookie cutter in terms of a warm referral. And I know this person, you got to bring him in, and you never met this person. He plays it off like you guys are best buddies, and you're being threatened to maybe be arrested for being in the building. Had it not been raining, who knows where you'd be today, that right, as a result. And so what I'm curious about is, when you joined Dell, when they eventually offered you a job and you accepted, and then you're there, did you go in with, I know you were there 20 plus years, but did you go in with, I'm going to give it 6 months and see how this works out? Did you go in with, okay, I'm here, I'm going to make this work now? And what was your mindset when you eventually got behind the firewall?
That's a really good question. You know, I'll sidetrack for a second. For years, I kept a running list because they would have a new group of new hires coming in every Monday. And then it started to slow, but there was always that same thread. I would go quiz new hires, whether they were my new hires when I was a leader or just peers. And I never found, for maybe the first 10 years, a new hire that didn't come in that had a connection that knew somebody.
Is that right?
Which made me feel even more special that Deepak had stepped up for me at that point. So even to this day, I still give him credit because he's a good guy, and I wouldn't have had the opportunity there without his help. So that was the way people got in. You knew somebody that knew somebody. They didn't do a lot of the recruiting in that way. But when I got in there, going back to what I said earlier, you know, I loved being at the bike shop. That was a lot of fun. You know, I did that while I was an RA in college, and I was working 40 hours a week, and I got, the busier I got, the better I did. And that taught me I need to stay focused by doing a lot of things at once. I'm not sit idly by and do 8 to 5. I need dynamic change in my environment. And I picked up from that sales is one of those areas that really is dynamic. And to this day, it's what I love about it. Every day is a different day. Every customer's got a different situation. I meet lots of people. So as an extrovert, that really kind of jazzes me up. It charges my batteries versus the alternative. But when I got to Dell, I sat down, I went through 3 weeks of training. They taught me about computers, everything else. And it wasn't the greatest training, by the way, with apologies, to those folks. But what I did see was a very competitive environment, and a lot of things where customers really valued the product. They knew who Dell was. Coming from where I was, where I had to establish credibility for myself and for the company I worked for, then try and create a demand for the product, create my own leads, follow up. I had to go make sure it got installed. I had to collect the check. I had to take care of the paperwork just to get paid. And then I get to Dell, and then my first job at Dell, everyone complained it was the worst job. It's horrible sitting on a phone queue. And I would take 80 to 125 calls a day. And most of them were transfers that just somebody angry they couldn't find their assigned, because we were the grunts on the queue, which was unassigned accounts for small companies. And within a few weeks, I was able to start building up where I would have 20, 30, 40 calls a day of people calling me directly, plus taking those 100 plus calls a day. And I loved it. I'm like, I don't have to establish credibility. The products work. I mean, it's not a perfect place, but compared to where I've been, that grounding rod, I could focus on just the optimistic part of what was good. And if I work more hours, I can make more money. If I have more sales, I can have more opportunity. And for the first few years, that firewall was not a firewall to me at all. It was actually just a playground where just working and applying common sense to my environment of, okay, I moved to a set of accounts. I have 30 accounts. Well, 10 of them buy a whole bunch of stuff. The other 10 buy a little bit and the bottom 10 buy nothing. Maybe I should spend some time with the ones buying nothing so that eventually they start being ones that buy a whole bunch. And every quarter I would hit, and it was... in fairness, everyone was hitting back then. That was probably the toughest part eventually as a leader later on, because everything was growing so fast, you couldn't tell who was good and who was bad. It was just fun. It was more just, it was so exciting because we were growing and winning that never felt like something I worried about, whether it was 6 months or not. And then 3 years in, I'd changed jobs 4 times already at that point, because they kept tapping me on the shoulder to move to different jobs. I decided to go into leadership because I was the one on the teams that everybody would come to for the know-it-all questions. And I realized I really enjoyed that, being able to shepherd people along and guide things. And, you know, I won't use some of the profanities I use to describe it normally, but the sausage making, I really liked kind of those sorts of things too, of helping to make sure that everybody was lined out and had obstacles out of their way and made it more efficient to go get the job done. I liked that kind of stuff. So I eventually moved into a role like that. And I think a quarter I had hit almost 300% to plan. And so I knew I would get punished with quota later anyway. So it made sense to make the jump then before that happened. But,
you know, so. Jay, my introduction to selling or professional selling was Xerox Corporation. And I kind of went into it backwards. I didn't go in. I was out of work, needed a job, and they were hiring. So I took it. But I went in with a six-month mindset of, let me just give it 6 months, see what happens. It ended up being almost 10 years. And I went through the gamut of, you know, sales rep, product specialist, sales manager. And then I became a sales trainer for the company. I was their national sales instructor. And that's when I really became interested in sales training, learning and development, and so on. And where I'm going with this is, you know, after 10 years with an organization, once I kind of hit my stride and I started to figure it out, a couple of president's clubs, and then especially when I became a trainer with the company, that's when the recruiters started to come my way about, hey, I see you've got success at Xerox. We're hiring here, hiring there. And I don't want to sit here to suggest that it was like bombardment all the time, but I received my fair share of emails and phone calls saying, hey, are you looking? After that length of time, but I decided to leave to join my own to start up my own company and get into this space. Where I'm going with this is, you know, right now, as we record this in 2022, there seems to be kind of a feeling out there where people are working for an organization for a year, 2 years, maybe 3 years, and they kind of jump ship, they go somewhere else. If you go on LinkedIn and you see some profiles, there's in a 5 year stretch, they've got 4 companies under their belt. And there's people who probably can't even comprehend how you can stay with one company for 5 years, let alone 20 plus years. And what I'd love to know is a couple of things. You must have had people say, hey, talk to me. I want to talk to you about pulling you to go somewhere else outside of Dell. I'm assuming as much, number one, over your 20 plus years. And number two, did you ever look really seriously? And ultimately, why did you stay that long? Because that's a long haul with one organization, really.
It's a question I get and still get today. I got a lot. And I think it's a fair question, by the way. If you're a recruiter or you're someone who is a hiring manager and you're talking to someone who'd been in the role that I have, I think it's the right question to ask, because in my experience there, people bifurcated into one of two directions. It was either they'd been there a long time and they really appreciated the protection of those walls and it gave them security and they had status in there, on and on. Or it was people who were more on the other side, probably the path I was on, when they were always trying to get things done and didn't really focus on necessarily scaling the career ladder, probably like they should have. If I'm pointing the finger honestly at myself, I know I could have certainly done a lot more at other companies, but you know, my Dell run was very good. I really enjoyed it and I have nothing but great memories. But I think the question is, for me, I had 17 jobs in 23 years. So wow. I was regularly moving to different things. I certainly suffer, as most of us who are any good in this industry do, of you know, getting bored, if you want to oversimplify it, but making sure you keep your focus. And I've long been a proponent of, if I can just recognize my ups and downs before someone else does, I can fix them. So you'll never see me with a down. You'll just see me up or more up. But the reality is we all go through them. So that's one of the things I've always focused on and try and teach mentors, peers, employees, like focus on knowing who you are and when you're down so you can fix it before I ever see it. That's going to save a lot of time for both of us if you're honest with yourself about what's going on. But, you know, I would move from to an acquisition role where I went to a business where I was going to either undo dead accounts or create accounts from scratch. And nobody wanted that job. Everybody, you know, I mean, it's at the time was a pretty painful job, whether you were an individual contributor or as a sales leader. I did it for both. And they hadn't hit their number in 2 years. And through some simple execution, because, you know, to our earlier conversation prior to the recording is, you know, there was a slew of different sales training programs that they had, and everyone would swear by the one that they had been through because they had a relationship with the trainer.
Right.
But the trainer was great. This guy was awesome. And I can tell you by name several trainers that I remember from other years that were amazing.
No, we don't talk about them on this podcast, Jay. That's
and okay. I won't, but my point that you as a trainer will appreciate. Every one of these times it would just fall straight into the trash can where it'd be like, oh, I do this training program. Do you? Well, what's your follow-up? Oh, and there wasn't any because they just remembered the class and that was as far as they took it. So you spend a whole bunch of money and it's all in, as you know, the devil's in the details. It's in the daily grind. It's in the repeatability. It's in, you know, inspecting what you want done and encouraging that and scenting it and then making sure it happens every day. That's whether it's you personally or a leader. So for me, changing those roles and I'd have a lot of success, and then I'd either get promoted or I'd be asked to move to a different role to go grow that business. And that went on for several years. At one point, I finally had to stop them and say, look, I don't want to be transferred anymore because I kept going from and this will sound like I'm patting myself on the back. I mean, I had great teams and, you know, definitely had a lot of success with them, but there were 4 years in a row. I would take a team from worst place in almost every metric and results to first place in all the activity metrics, all the customer touch points, which would then yield to us getting to first place in results as well, going a trip, whatever. And they would come by and, hey, we want you to go take over this other territory. We want you to go take over this territory. We want you to go to move to this business. And it's very flattering, except I started to learn that as a leader, I wasn't being able to nurture that I'm not getting to meet with you 2 years in a row. So I have a plan with you. I work with you for 3, 4, 6, 9 months, but I never get to see the follow through. So they were shortcutting my development at that point in terms of being able to really know how to help, you know, a direct report or a coworker or anybody else develop and grow. Because if you're only seeing the front side and you never get to go through the next step, you're kind of cutting off some things. So changing a lot got me through that time. And the few times where I was really ready to go, and, you know, probably 15 years in, I was at a place where I would tell people, hey, the grass might be greener someday. Key is for you to judge for yourself on what green means and stick with it, because I'm more of a loyalist. If I make a change, I want to be able to apply it the way I do decision-making. I want to get as much information as possible, make a decision and stick with that for a while so I can learn how to adapt to it. And then if it's not the right one, I'll make a change, but I don't want to make changes quickly. I want to, you know, switch quickly, but stick with things long enough to see where I can kind of take it. So when I was ready to go at those, I did entertain offers at those things. I had a couple of times I almost jumped, and then for family reasons, different reasons, I won't go into here, but I, you know, family health issues, I ended up sticking around and kind of putting my career on a back burner for a few years. Although I still had a lot of fun, I just didn't pursue moving up to next level roles there.
So I saw on LinkedIn your profile, 23 years and 3 months at Dell, to your point, multiple different roles over the years. And with that, I presume came multiple relationships and friendships and people that you got to know. And so ultimately, Jay, if you're open to it, what factored in your decision to move on? It sounds like it was yours after that length of time. And if so,
You know, it actually wasn't my decision.
It wasn't.
Although it's interesting how the universe works sometimes. I was, you know, I had been running, I'd been different roles, field sales, inside sales leadership, second, third level sales leadership, where I was, you know, anywhere from 20 to 180 people in my organization. Yep. I'd run software, hardware, specialty stuff, overlay things, so a lot of different roles in those 17. I went on my honeymoon in 2019, and at the time I was running inside sales for about 100 specialty salespeople, which were fantastic. And I had a pre-sales and post-sales engineering group and business ops. Again, some really good teams I really enjoyed working with. On my honeymoon, my boss calls me and says, hey, I need you to switch roles. We need you to go back to the field because the guy was covering the West quit. And it's for all the biggest accounts globally. And he goes, now that you're married, you can travel again. I'm like, well, I've traveled before, but fair enough. I definitely was ready to go do something different. And so I agreed to take it. And of course, the minute I took it, I immediately the normal amount of external offers and recruiters calling was always one or two a month, sometimes right. one a week, but all of a sudden accelerated to like 5 or 10 a month because I'd started a new job. It was crazy the way that kind of rolled through. But I was making a lot more money. You know, field leadership always pays better than inside leadership. That's a given. Mm-hmm. And I was able to go through that team. And, you know, the day I started on that team, within 2 weeks, half the team had quit because of the prior leader. And as you know, when someone starts to put resumes out there, good people are going to find a lot of good opportunities. Yeah. And at that point, the ship has sailed. It's going to be hard to pull them back, especially if they're getting offers that are 100,000 above what they're making now. They're not going to stay, and you wouldn't want them to stay because it's not good for them. You want them to have the right opportunities. So I promptly had to go hire 6 people within the first 6 months for a team that was focused on the biggest accounts they'll had into a specialist role that needed subject matter expertise, and I couldn't hire externally. So that was turn that whole team around. And then COVID started to kick in, and they started getting very nervous about OPEX and different things. And so every group had a bunch of layoffs, and I'd been working on things, but it's funny, like I was ready to go. I was looking for other roles but didn't expect it all to be laid off. And then sure enough, out of the blue. So wasn't bitter at all about being laid off. I'll save for a negative podcast day, my exit experience, but a lot of good friends, and to your point, you know, years and years of great acquaintances and people that I can still reach out to today, and a big network of folks that I have access to there that I consider very dear friends.
So, you know, Jay, when this happened and you essentially are given a check not to come to work the next day after, yeah. you know, 20 plus years with the organization in the middle of, you know, global pandemic, where things in 2020 were not anywhere as clear as they are today in terms of how do we figure this out. And people were dying, companies were laying people off, furloughs and budgets were being slashed. Like, it was not exactly easy. And even though your resume was pretty strong, did you choose to take some time for yourself? Did you look right away? If you did, was it harder? And what was that transition period like for you after leaving pretty much all you knew, really, quite frankly, for most of your working career?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair question. You know, I was not worried leaving, you know, and you probably see it on my face earlier. There's still some sadness there. It's not bitterness. It was more sad that, you know, for example, the leader I worked for I thought I had a good relationship with, and I worked probably 4 or 5 conversations a week for 6 years. And then all of a sudden for a month, no communication. And then I get added to a list, which that's business. I've been around enough of those layoffs. I've done way more than I care to have done. But it's all about how you respectfully handle it and deal with people. And so still a little sadness over that. But leaving, give me a check to walk away and I can go take my talents elsewhere. And there were plenty of opportunities. I just looked at that as a positive. I bought some other acreage with that severance check because I wanted to think of it in a positive way. So I bought a small ranch out in, you know, about 3 hours from here for a getaway where I enjoy to go spend time. Just so I think positively of my years at Dell with that money instead of putting on things. So I did stay out for a couple of months. I had job offers the first couple of weeks. Matter of fact, I had 2 competitors call me the day I got let go. And I wasn't even officially let go until Friday. This was on a Wednesday. I'm like, how do you know I got let go already?
Small world.
Like, well, your name came up in my boss's staff meeting and they really like you. And as soon as they have a role, they want you to come over. I go, okay, that's great. So I fought long and hard about going into some of those roles with some competitors of Dell's because I have some good networks there, and I would never say no to that as a path, but I was really looking just to stretch a little bit and learn some things differently because it close to 50 and now I'm 50. I really wanted to go stretch my, you know, desire to learn and pick up new things. So I also got recruited by Ascentium, which is a small startup company, maybe a little bigger than a startup in some ways, but making 3D printers, and they wanted someone to build a sales organization. And originally it was not a big role. It was a few people managing globally. And they said, hey, we want to go grow really aggressively and go public. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now I'm interested. That's scary. And I wanted something that scared me a little bit because financially really wasn't a concern. I've saved my money and I could make the choices, you know, and I wanted to make choices that were smart and more importantly, fun for me. because if I'm being very candid, I loved my time at Dell and I could make money there. But the last 4 or 5 years as a leader, the fun was not what it should have been. And so I was looking to have a little bit more enjoyment out of the role, whatever I was going to go do. So that's why I chose that path versus some of the more traditional technology-based roles that were out there for me in that. But I did stay out for a couple of months. I ended up getting in a car wreck, totaling a car, got COVID. Let's see, what else happened in the time before I started work again? It was a crazy few months. Daughter totaled a car. Other daughter got in a car wreck. Just a crazy confluence of silliness, but we made it through it. And, you know, and I've learned a lot in the last year plus just being exposed to CEO level. You know, I report to the CEO. I have a lot more visibility into things on the decision-making than I probably had at Dell. What's been interesting the most though, is not about Dell or Ascentium or anything there. It's going through that grinder of 23 years now and all those different roles. I probably forget sometimes how much I've been exposed to and how many different kinds of environments I've had to overcome or learn to have success and help my team be successful. And you just, you take that for granted that everybody has the same lens that you do and they've seen the same things that you have in that time and realize that's not the case. And so you just start to really take a step back and appreciate the different perspectives that people have. And it's helped me to start listening a little bit closer to, you know, people I interact with because they have something to learn from them. It just may be different than I'm used to hearing. So that's been kind of the eye-opener on this side.
You know, Jay, what a ride, man, that you've had. I mean, so we start with, you know, you're thinking maybe of going down an engineering path. You're at Texas Tech, you graduate, you then kind of get introduced to sales. It wasn't exactly lovely. It doesn't sound like your early introductions, door-to-door commission sales. That'll put some hair on your chest right there. And yet you figure it out. And then you end up, you know, your entry into Dell has to be one of the most unique stories that I've ever heard. I swear, had it been sunny that day, I don't even know if we'd be talking today, who knows. And then you go into Dell, you know, 20 plus years with the organization, multiple roles. You shared, you know, at the start of the podcast, you went through what sounds like obviously a devastating personal tragedy with the passing of your wife, you know, almost 10 years ago now. And you obviously managed that. And then you get a check from Dell to say, thanks for all your time. But you know, we don't need you tomorrow. And then I loved what you just said about trying to turn, you know, that maybe that negative feeling of how the exit happened into, okay, well, I'm going to take this and I'm going to buy some property. I'm going to buy my ranch and that's going to be the positive. And I got to say, man, it's been great having you on. Just congrats on your total outlook on how you look at things and everything you've been able to create up until this point. And just thanks a lot for being here, really.
Oh, my pleasure. That was good chatting with you.
Yeah, you bet. It was a lot of fun. I appreciate it. And I hope everyone enjoyed it. And we're going to wrap it up right now. And as I always say, everybody, remember, your intention matters. Why? Because that's the result you'll tend to get. We're out of here. We'll do it again next week. And stay safe, everyone.